Welcome to Health Tech Central, the podcast that connects you with the wisdom of trailblazers at the intersection of health, care, and technology. 42-ish minutes of entertaining inspiration, actionable insights, and answers to just about everything. Hitchhiking, most definitely allowed. With your host, Mehdi Khaled.
Hello everyone, today we're going to Estonia, a country that has inspired a lot of people. A young country with a small population, I guess 1.4 million, with a lot of its population in the working age group. So I think it's about 64% between 18 and 65 years old. Very active, very digitized. And today we have a guest from Estonia. Her name is Hanna-Laura Tal. She started her career as a physiotherapist, then moved to digital health, worked for the Ministry of Social Affairs, and moved on then to do a bigger digitization initiative with Nortel. She's now the head of product capability at Nortel in the Middle East, but also doing other projects across Europe. We wanted to tap into her brains and experience in going from being a physiotherapist to becoming a digital health professional to becoming a wider spectrum digitization professional. Hanna-Laura, welcome to the show.
Hello, everyone. Excited to be here.
What inspired you to be a digital health professional, move to the Minister of Social Affairs, having begun your career as a physiotherapist and then staying in the digital health realm?
This is actually quite a long story, and it takes me back to the years when I was finishing high school and was thinking what to do with my life. So I'm coming from the family of a health professional. So my parents are medical professionals, my sister is a doctor, and I had this influence from the healthcare. I saw a job opportunity in the Ministry of Social Affairs, and in a way I'm always trying to improve the world and have the impact, and I thought that working in the public sector, it's the best way of really having the impact. And I decided to apply, got the job, and was exposed to that environment and managed to contribute to e-health network in the European Union, which is basically making the recommendations for member states how the e-health should be applied across the countries. So I was really lucky to have this experience and see how different countries are doing in the e-health space. And of course, Estonia has been forerunner there, so we could also share about our experience and help other countries in that sense.
It's interesting you say that. So seen from a European country, like older European countries, Estonia is a very young nation still. How was your experience when you were, say, in discussions with other European countries, you telling people this is how things are done, basically, because you've been quite successful, you just started from scratch, but you started on a clean slate because, historically you just, separated from the Russian Empire and like other countries as well. Then you had the clean state, you started from scratch, but you did everything right, most of the things right. How did that come across when a young nation like Estonia that has digitized everything that can be digitized, how does it come across when you talk to other European countries who still are stuck in processes of the 70s and 80s? A new young nation, young people coming to these guys and telling them this is how things are done. What's your experience there? How were the reactions and what were the takeaways from these discussions for you?
I believe Estonian story is always really inspiring, and exactly as you're saying that we have come from the paper-based system to a digital domain. We did some core things right, such as we established the digital identity, we have the X-Road as the cornerstone of our e-state. Then for the older Western nations, it does seem to be easy. Because when you think about going from a fax system to fully digitalized healthcare, for example, then this is not that easy, and you would need to start rethinking the processes. And of course, Estonian size is our advantage. That, as you mentioned, we are 1.3 million people, and we can be agile, and we can take quick decisions, and it doesn't cost that much when you need to change the system of the country of 80 million, for example. So the story has been inspiring, but of course people feel that it's always not applicable because the system is different, and not everything that we have been doing in Estonia can be overtaken to other countries. The countries can use it as an inspiration and they define the small steps for themselves to get to this end game that Estonia has. For example, during my time in the Ministry of Social Affairs, we were doing some research to telehealth and mHealth solutions, what the members states are currently using and thinking about implementing to empower patients and have better health outcomes. Then from this area, especially in the digital health, and not thinking about the system-wide digitalization, then other nations also have a lot going on, and the advantage there is more health insurances, more money in the country overall. Estonia, yes, we are doing good when it comes to overall digitalization of the nation, but those small-scale health innovations, digital health apps, even today we don't have that many being used by our patients. So I think in that sense, bigger nations have their advantages and can bring those innovations closer to patients. And perhaps you don't need full-scale digitalization to implement such solutions.
Yeah, sure. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, scale is definitely a big factor there. And I think what we still need to see is when I was sitting in a panel discussion last week with some politicians here in Austria, and whenever I cite an example of another country that made the leap in digitization, digital health in this particular case, you know, the immune reaction to my, you know, trying to inspire and give some examples of benchmarks is also has always been, and most of the time been, we cannot compare our country to that country because, and they cite the scale as a major factor. What we need to see increasingly, though, and I think we can always get inspired by any nation anywhere on the planet if we are willing to let ourselves be inspired. You can be inspired by the vision, you can be inspired by the aspirations, you can be inspired by the actions, you can be inspired by the way people do things cohesively and in a broader community. But then, you know, these roadblocks that people put in front of themselves, shooting themselves in the knee and saying, no, we cannot be inspired by that nation because it's too small, we are bigger and we have bigger problems. The scale is true, the scale is reality. But then I still believe that we can still get inspired by the way, you know, your leaders have put a vision and executed that vision. Where in Europe, we still have this leadership problem that people who have decision-making power very often lack the vision. And so that's a problem, but that's a different problem. We can, you know, talk about it in another episode. But I think we can still be all inspired by Estonia. We can still be inspired by other countries like Singapore and others who have made the leap, who had a vision and executed on that vision. The rest is really how to do it and how to make it happen. Now, the IT industry in Estonia contributes about 7.5% of the GDP. The initiatives like e-residency, etc., are very well known worldwide. How do you see Estonia's digital infrastructure enabling innovation?
Of course, it's helping quite a bit. As I mentioned, we have the digital identity in place, and each Estonian citizen has their ID number, and this is used for authentication of oneself across all the systems in Estonia. So logging into any new system that's provided by the state in Estonia is super easy, and also the private sector services are using the same digital identity. So this is one of the cornerstones. The second cornerstone is the X-Road, and that is enabling the data exchange between different registries, between different systems. And coming back to the previous questions, of course, Estonia can inspire the countries, and I think what the countries can learn from Estonia is to pick take those best practices and see how they could implement those to enable the digital innovation. And thinking about the data exchange, then one of the successes that Estonia has had for the health innovators is opening our health information system to third parties, making sure that patients and citizens can share their data with third-party apps, for example, if they allow. So this is a clear way of enabling innovation and making sure that the health innovators can build on top of the national information system, for example. So the overall IT landscape and the infrastructure that's being set up is definitely supporting our health innovators and the people who are bringing the innovations to the market. They need to be creative to overcome the challenges that Estonia has, such as being a single-payer system where we have the, how's it called, the insurance, health insurance fund paying for all the health services. So the private insurance isn't really big in Estonia, of course. It's growing year by year, but pushing through the innovations in the single payer system where you need to justify the impact and get your innovation being reimbursed. It's a long journey. Of course, it's similar in other countries, but this is definitely one of the challenges that our innovators have when they want to bring their innovations to the market.
Yeah, and then on top of that, we have EU regulations such as the AI Act, which is for many, and for me too, a big roadblock in terms of compliance. And it's as if the European Union built a China wall around itself and around innovation and made it very, very difficult to climb that wall and get to the other side. So there are obviously no discussions and public consultations about that right now, published yesterday by the European Union, to try and navigate those streams in terms of lowering the barrier and make it less difficult for startups and innovators to come to the table, because the AI Act has been very hard pill to swallow for many. So you have to be compliant, and the costs of compliance, obviously. And so that adds to the complexity of the challenges you're talking about in the Estonian landscape.
Talking about the patient portal, for example, then back in the days when I was in the ministry, they were calling it Digilugu, so digital story when to translate to English, then this system wasn't really user-friendly. There weren't many people who were using it because there wasn't anything that you could do. And back in during my time when I was in the ministry, then we were concepting how the patient portal should look like, what the users and the patient should be getting from there. And I'm very happy to see that while I have been away, then year by year the improvements have come to life, and now we are having a really nice looking patient portal in fingertips. Everybody can use it. I'm not sure what are the usage statistics, but I at least personally have been using it many times in the past months, not only to look at your data and analysis, but you can also register to the health appointments there at the search for health appointment times across all the health providers in Estonia, and they can be also privately paid. So this is definitely making the access to health information easier and bringing it closer to the citizens. Although one key thing to keep in mind is that it is the same for any kind of system that's being offered by the public state is that when we design the systems, we need to think about the user. And at the end of the day, it is the citizen who needs to benefit from the system. In health innovations, the doctors and health professionals need to have the pleasant user experience. Whenever a new system or initiative is thought about, we need to start with the user in mind. And exactly as you're asking, how is the user benefiting from the system? And I would say that for any kind of digital initiative, this should be the starting point. And then the overall system needs to be built around the end user and the benefits that they should be getting of it.
Yeah, we make a very valid point in terms of not only usability, user-friendliness and benefit for the users, but also I would say the processes you are digitizing. So oftentimes we talk about digitization and people embark in digitization initiatives, spend a lot of money on digitizing old processes. So basically what you're doing, you're just putting a lot of money to digitize old processes and maintaining the status quo. It's just now, instead of being on paper, it's just digitized. So to me, it's like an extension or very expensive way to maintain mediocrity, I would say, because everything that's in the past and everything that's not functioning or suboptimally functioning could be optimized or even re-engineered. And so a lot of countries, especially European countries, by the way, the digitization happening, for example, in Austria, it's digitizing old processes. We're not doing a lot of new things here. Discussions I've had last week, that was the first question. So what are the lessons learned from other countries? I said, well, you know, the lessons learned are sometimes you have to see what you're digitizing. Are you taking the opportunity to review your processes and make everything you do user-friendly, make it more efficient, or are we just digitizing paper and putting it on a screen, right? And that's a problem. Now, the example of Austria I've given you, the ELGA, which is the electronic patient records in Austria, is great. It's working. The only thing that's missing is, okay, I don't wake up every morning wanting to look at my health records, right? But I would like to, when I need some healthcare services, I'd like to go on one portal and be able, like you do in Estonia, be able to see what are the available specialists, what are the available slots in my radius. That does not exist. They're talking about it, but I know it's going to take at least 10 years for it to be implemented. And so these are the things that when we talk about digital health records and we talk about electronic health records and we talk about user friendliness and digitizing processes, this is to me as a citizen, one of the most important features of digitization, being able to see and have visibility on access to healthcare services in my radius. Anything else is important, but honestly, it's secondary. Access to records is great, but I want to have access to the services before I have access to records. And so these are the things that we're still missing, even with EHDS, the European Health Data Space now. Great. We're sharing data across European nations. It's amazing. And eventually it's going to happen with some delay, as expected, but it's going to happen. It's a good initiative. But then what do I get from it as a citizen if I only have access to my records? But what's beyond that? So the roadmap is somehow missing a vision. And that's the things that we kind of... Look, I'm not saying it's not good, it's good. It's just we always are in this transactional way of thinking. Let's do one thing at a time and then see what happens. As opposed to, this is our vision, let's work toward realizing that vision. And by the way, sharing records is one step toward that vision. No, we don't have that. And that's something I'm kind of missing in the European space right now. Anyway, small nations can move in a very agile way. But then talking about agile and design thinking have helped you move your needle in the current job you're doing, because you're managing obviously a bunch of product owners and agile must be a central part of your day-to-day operations. Now, how do you use these methodologies to manage product development, especially when you operate under a different cultural setting? Obviously, you're from Estonia, you're managing product development and projects in other parts of the world, namely also the Middle East. How does that work? Agile for a methodology, and then how does agile and design thinking and everything work in different cultural settings, and what are the challenges that you're facing? What are the lessons learned for you?
Very good question. And working across nations and cultures is definitely something that I've had my learnings there, and I can't say that I have mastered it, but trying to get better day by day. But when we talk about those methodologies such as agile and design thinking, then I believe what's key is to start with the value that they intend to bring. And agile, in a way, is the answer to the traditional waterfall implementation style, when you define the requirements in the beginning, write the documentation, develop it, and then after 2 years you realize that the world has changed. Actually, this kind of innovation doesn't make sense anymore. So in agile development, where we are splitting our work to 2 week sprints, let's say, we ensure that the focus is on outcomes and that the innovation that we are bringing along still makes sense, and this is relevant, and we can iteratively improve the status quo. And when I'm working on digital transformation projects for customers across countries, then usually we are applying the agile methodology. Of course, when thinking about the public sector projects, fixed scope contracts, then we might not be able to be as agile as the private sector is, but using those principles, having the focus on outcomes and iteratively developing the systems is nowadays a way to go, as we know that with AI and all the innovations, the world is changing at a rapid speed. And if you define certain requirements today and see the implementation only after a year or two, then this might be outdated by the time when users get to use it. And in terms of the design thinking, then the key there is to start with the problem, bring everybody together into the problem space and making sure that we understand it in the same way. And then again, rapidly defining the solution, prototyping and testing it also helps to move in the iterative cycles and ensure that we are not behind the closed doors for weeks and only then show the results to our customers. I think those methodologies definitely help different parties work better together. Being on the provider side, open up our way of working to our customers and bring them on the journey together with us. Because at the end of the day, great things happen when different parties, different stakeholders start to work together, and using those common methodologies that are understood by different people across the countries, across the organizations, helps us all be on the same page and move together as the unified front, because great things don't happen when different parties work against each other. And I would say that those methodologies help us all work together and improve the world and the systems that we are working on.
So how do you see differences in applying these methodologies, agile and design thinking, under different skies? So I'm sure the perception and the way of working of these methodologies in Estonia are different. So you have to adapt. If you go to the Middle East, obviously the culture is different. Even the perception of time is different. Time stretches, as we know. How do you define agile in Estonia versus agile in the Middle East? What's the unit of time there? I'm trying to get a sense of reality. So if your iteration cycle is 2 weeks in Estonia, does that cycle apply to other settings as well? Or do you have to redefine it according to what people expect and perceive?
It's a very good question, actually. And I would say that this cultural context has to be taken into account. Indeed, as Estonians, we are super lean. We don't have the high work list. And when you say that something will get done in one day or in a week, then actually it will happen this way. And Estonians are keeping their words, and it's easy to do certain things in Estonia. Exactly as you're saying, in Middle East, the sense of time is different. And when we are planning our projects, then this is something that we are taking into account and we need to think about, because of course, it as a vendor, it might be easy to offer a certain kind of solution, but the approval cycle takes time, and probably within the organization, the buy-in needs to be achieved from different stakeholders. Then this has impact on the timeline overall. But still, when thinking about the agile implementation sprint, then this 2 weeks is 2 weeks in Estonia, and it's 2 weeks in the Middle East. Only the preparation for this implementation probably might take a little bit longer until we can start with the work. One of the design thinking like methodologies is a Google design sprint, where different stakeholders are coming together, looking into the problem space, defining the solution and testing it. And this approach also takes a week when the team and different stakeholders are coming together. But maybe then after this week to validate everything and get into actual implementation, and the preparation time is something that takes longer. So of course, I agree that we need to take into account the cultural context and how it impacts the time and overall the way of working of people, but those commonly known approaches, we need to be very creative to make sure that the urgency is felt also from the customer side or from the stakeholder side. So the ambitious timeline of projects that we are working on can be actually achieved.
Now, in terms of enablement, I see personally, because like you, I've done many countries, I've lived in many countries and worked in many countries, I see skills and enablement, or digital skills and enabling those digital skills as a major enabler in terms of moving forward at speed, but also efficiently. How do you see that? I mean, Estonia has done a lot in terms of digital skills enablement and upskilling, and there is a lot has been done there. What can we learn from there? What can be transposed to other countries in terms of really upskilling people to the digital age, but knowing what it takes to do an AI application, knowing the risks of an AI application, extrapolating those risks to other areas as well, and how to deal with those risks, how to mitigate those risks, takes another level of experience, skill sets, and knowledge, right? And how to bridge the gap is not an art. It's actually should be embedded in every country's strategy effectively and harnessed. And so how do you see that, comparing Estonia to other markets or to other countries? How do you see that gap in making sure people get the knowledge and the skills of the things they're dealing with every day in digitization?
It's a very good question, actually, because I totally agree that one of the enablers for digitalizing the systems and making sure that those are also used by the citizens is the overall digital literacy and skills of the people. And in Estonia, I actually don't know about the numbers, but I believe most of the citizens and people in the working age have the necessary skills to use the systems. Also, I mentioned earlier that my family consists of health professionals, and for example, when I'm looking at my mother, she's not the digital native because she's in the older generation, and it takes time and effort for her to learn. But as the digital is the way to go, and when she's also using the health information system at the work, then she needs to learn it. And as everyone's doing that, then she doesn't have the resistance in that sense, because she knows that if she wants to keep up with the world, make sure that she is relevant and her skills are relevant, then she simply needs to learn it. And for example, she's also switching the job at the hospital where she's working at, and I've had some anxious calls of oh my god, I need to learn the system. But the mindset is that I have to do it, and there isn't another option. And when we compare it to maybe other countries, when the skills of the people on a larger scale aren't there yet, then it's so much easier to say that I don't want to use it because I don't know it, and please teach me. And for me, it's easier to use the paper-based system, and I don't want to log into this system because it doesn't work and it doesn't know what I want to do. So in such an environment, the country and the state can definitely intervene and help and define the programs and make sure that the people have the necessary skills. And of course, it should be embedded into the overall education system, but the younger nations anyways are the digital natives nowadays, and probably during those transitions years, even more investments should be made to make sure that the older generation and the older working age people have the necessary skills to use the system. So I can definitely agree that those investments should be made, and we should support the people. But it also starts with the mindset, and the people should be open-minded, and the testing of the system should take place early on to make sure that we are not designing the systems for the new generation, but also make sure that the people who are not digital natives can use them.
Yeah, that's a very apt comment. I think inclusion is a very crucial thing to do. We can't just digitize and exclude those who are not up to speed. So there should always be an option for them. So I was reading an article the other day about a country in Africa where a sizable portion of the population is illiterate. So basically they can't read and write, but they still, when they go to the hospital or go to any public service, because the country is not digitized yet, the employee gives the citizen a form with a pen and asks them to fill, not knowing that the person doesn't read and write. So you put the person kind of in a corner and you create and trigger lots of, we're still talking about paper, right? Not even talking about digitization, not talking even. So we're talking about problems in other countries that do exist today in 2025 and that are prominent. And so to me, being digitally illiterate is the same as being illiterate on paper. It's exactly the same thing. And so we need to enable that and find ways to include people and bring them up to speed and bring them to the table either way. So either by enabling them to do things they're comfortable with at their level, or by upskilling their level of knowledge and making them become digitally literate so they can use the tools that are meant to help them have a better service or access better services. Now, you've been in healthcare, you've gone away from healthcare and done other things. What are the similarities or the differences that you see between digitizing the healthcare sector versus digitizing other sectors?
It's a very good question. And I would say that the healthcare as a public service that's offered to the citizens of the nations, it has many similarities, and I wouldn't even like to look at it as a separate digitalization service. It should be looked as any other process that's being digitalized. So, of course, in healthcare, there are different user groups that need to be kept in mind. When for other state services, are the back office workers from the state. In healthcare, we have the citizen and doctors. Perhaps this is something that needs to be kept in mind, that all the user groups get get the necessary services from the systems. What is similar for healthcare and other public services is that in product management overall, we often talk about the edge cases and say that let's focus on the 80% of the use cases and leave the other 20% in the backlog and for the future. When it comes to public services and especially healthcare, then we can't miss out of certain user groups that might be part of those specific edge cases. And maybe in healthcare, it's even more important that we focus on those vulnerable parties. So in general, I would say that we shouldn't look at healthcare as something different, but there perhaps even it's even more important to think about the user and different user groups that the digitalization is affecting and making sure that they get the necessary benefits out of the digital services.
Very clear. In terms of lessons learned, obviously, Estonia has moved the needle in terms of digitalization very fast and very far. Now, when you look back and you see a lot of countries doing and going through the transition, still digitizing, probably not the right way, but we're doing it in Estonia being a member of the European Union. How do you see this? If you have a piece of advice or some comments to make in terms of what to do, what not to do, what other things that you've learned in your journey as an Estonian citizen, but also as a digital professional, what would be the recommendations that you'd make for transitioners?
Yeah, I think one of the keys there is coming from the product management domain overall. And I would say that the focus should be on the problem. So be clear, what is the problem that you are solving? What is your context? Because as we started our discussion, each country, each environment is different, and we can get inspired by other nations and look at the best practices, but we need to be situationally aware and know what is the unique context of our system. So my recommendation would be that start with the most pressing problem, solve it, and then pick the next one. Because often what happens, countries' digitalization journey and in development of digital systems overall, is that we want to do everything at the same time, but it doesn't work like that. So you need to start with one problem, solve it, go to the next one. And I really liked what you mentioned, that the vision should be there. So define the vision as at the start, and then see what are the biggest problems stopping you getting to that vision, and go one by one and really solve those problems. Because halfway fixing some things doesn't show the impact, and then it's also very difficult to get the investment into the area that you are currently focusing on.
Yeah, which means basically it's better to have one big problem solved and you move on to the next one, other than having many problems half solved and they come and bite you back at night. That's what happens most of the time. All right, Hannelore, thank you very much for being with me. I appreciate your time. It was really very insightful. Thank you. See you next time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
This has been Health Tech Central. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast channel and give us a rating or review. Finally, you can check out our news on healthtechcentral.io and inspire us with your feedback. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next exciting episode of Health Tech Central.